Hello and welcome to the second edition of the Next Man Up podcast. My name is Logan Wortman and I'm joined by my very good friend, Jacob Roth. Jacob, say what up to the people.
What up?
We are talking to you on the evening of Monday, October 12th, so just a day after a very eventful Sunday in the world of sports. Lakers won the highly anticipated 2020 NBA championship in a rather one-sided victory in Game 6 against the Miami Heat. Yesterday also gave us a full slate of NFL Sunday games to digest with you here on the pod, including the Dak Prescott horrendous ankle injury and some other stuff that we'll get to just in a second. I wanted to save the NBA talk for later on in the pod, just because I have a lot of thoughts and things on my mind to talk about in regards to the completion of this season, being the basketball fanatic that I am. So we will be talking about just this whole 2020 season and stuff looking forward in this offseason later on in the podcast. But to start off, Jacob, what were your initial thoughts on this Dak Prescott injury and what it means for the Cowboys?
Okay, so for those of you that don't know, the Cowboys this Sunday were playing, and about, I want to say it was in the third quarter. I can't remember exactly when it happened, but he got injured and messed up his ankle really bad. Like, he had to get carted off to the field. He had a cast on similar to what happened to Alex Smith 2 years ago, who actually also got to be playing. But anyway, back to Dak Prescott. Messed up his ankle. It looked really, really bad. Something that you never want to see injuries or anything like that. Like, that's not something that you ever want to see. But in terms of what it means for the Cowboys, they have a pretty good backup. That being having Andy Dalton, who was the Bengals quarterback for a long time. He was able to go in there and end up getting that win. They won 37-34 against the Giants to advance to 2-5. But it's just terrible to see injuries like this. But if you're a Cowboys fan, it's not the end of the year. It's not the end of the world. One thing that I have seen that I don't like, just in general, is before I go to this, talk about Phillies fans. Last episode, and this is a genuine apology. This isn't me being, like, joking around. Genuine apology. I accidentally said that our friend Anthony had a hot take, and it was in the wrong year. And I genuinely thought that he thought this last year. But it was Carson Wentz's 2017 campaign that he thought he deserved MVP, which he didn't. He played in 13 games and was only on pace to score 36 and throw 11 picks. But that is the mistake I made. I'm owning my mistake. I am sorry for misquoting him. So if anybody's listening and knows Anthony, he's not that bad. And that is it for that. But speaking of Carson Wentz, Philly, I've seen Philly fans giving Dak Prescott this, like, a lot of crap about being injury, like, oh, because Cowboys fans make fun of Carson Wentz for being injury prone. Dak Prescott doesn't miss games. He has this one injury, and you're saying all of a sudden he's as injury prone as Carson Wentz, who's missed time almost every single season? Like, the Eagles, nobody in the NFC East has a quarterback figured out, so I think the Cowboys are going to be okay. I think that Andy Dalton's going to be a good game manager for them. He's not going to win them games, but I don't think he'll necessarily lose them too many games. They're already not looking great. They've already lost some games they should have won. Sitting at 2-3, I think that in my mind, they're the favorites to win the NFC East, which is kind of a potato of a division right now.
Mm.
So that's kind of, if that sums everything up for that one. I think Andy Dalton will step in and do an okay job. I think we'll see the Cowboys will look different. But I'm just excited to see kind of what happens going forward. Obviously, Dak Prescott already had surgery on his ankle. So prayers out for him. Hopefully everything goes well for that. You never want to see a guy get hurt. That's my least favorite thing with sports is what ifs. Like, what if Derrick Rose in basketball would have never torn his ACL? Mm-hmm. What would the NBA landscape look like? Like, what all these things that just, like, nobody wants to think about what ifs with sports. Because these are more than just, like, they're people out there. They're not just names that we say are doing things. They're actual people. And it's a whole livelihood thing. So obviously you want to see him get better. Hopefully it's he comes back next season just as strong and we're able to see the Dak Prescott we saw before.
Yeah, for sure. I was kind of worried about him. I was actually watching that game live when that happened. and him just getting carted off the field, like thinking about, because I'm pretty sure, didn't he come out and talk about how he was kind of dealing with some like depression and stuff like that earlier?
No, he did talk about that. It was during this whole crazy off season, he stepped out and he was like, and he brought up just mental health and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's a side that I never thought of, but like, I know that he gained the respect of a ton of guys just being open about that, because that's not something that's easy to talk about. DeMar DeRozan talked about it in the NBA, and I know that there was a clip after, I believe it was the week they played the Falcons, one of the Falcons tight ends, he has an organization that's about mental health, and so he came out and talked to Dak and said how that's really hard to do, and so Prescott has talked about mental health stuff before, and that's something that you kind of forget about, but you really shouldn't, because this is going to be a big, I didn't even think of that. That's a really good point, Logan.
Yeah. I was just thinking, because like, I think in recent years he's lost one of his brothers and also his mom. And then, you know, I heard him talk about like depression and all that kind of stuff. And it's just like from the outside looking in, I don't know what it is for him, but I would assume like football is one of those, like the things that keeps the joy in his life.
The outlets. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just kind of sucks when your entire season is taken away from you like that. But yeah, so yeah, definitely for sure. Prayers up for him. I'm really feeling for him right now. But yeah, and I guess with Andy Dalton as their backup, you know, I, being the casual NFL fan that I am, I know that he started in Cincinnati for a long time, and I saw like on the screen during last game that he leads the Bengals franchise in all-time passing yards and touchdowns. So obviously he's somewhat of a capable quarterback. But I guess where would he rank in like terms of like starting level quarterbacks? Do you think he can start and with other teams around the league?
Yeah. No, I think that the garbage show that is Cincinnati made it a lot harder, like put him in a worse light than he needed to be in. In my opinion, they've had a terrible offensive line for a long time. They used to have a really good offensive line, and that's when Cincinnati was like, they were competing for the AFC a lot, but then like they just never got a play, they never got it done. And part of that was Dalton's fault, but like, I think that across the entire NFC East, they wish they had Andy Dalton as their backup, because he'd be starting for him. Like, there's a lot of things, like, I think there's a lot of teams that he could start for. Yeah. I think that he has the potential, like, if he plays to what I think he can, he could get to be like a top 15, like a top half quarterback in the league, lower top half. But I think that he has the ability with the things that Dallas has in place, and the offensive line that Dallas has in place, to really give him an opportunity to show what kind of football player he is, and not just have to be like always making circus plays to get wins and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like we're seeing Joe Burrow have to do week in and week out. Which is not easy to do. And it's the same system. Like almost nothing about that Cincinnati offense has changed except Joe Burrow got plugged in. So we don't need to talk about Cincinnati, but I think that Andy Dalton is a capable quarterback, and he can get things done if he needs to.
Yeah, true. So also, for those of you who don't know, Jacob's a big Patriots fan. So he, you know, was watching Tom Brady for, I don't know, 15 years. How long has it been? Was he with New England?
No, he was with New England for almost 20. He got drafted in, it was the 190. Oh, no, I'm going to get put on blast on the internet. I'm pretty sure it was the 199th pick of the 2000 NFL draft. 2000 NFL draft. I think it's, I'm pretty sure it's 2000. Yeah, 2000 draft, 199th pick. So that'd be 2001, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. So that's 19 seasons.
Okay.
18 seasons.
Okay.
I don't know. I've paid attention since 06.
Okay, fair enough. But anyways, he obviously is in Tampa Bay now. Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Tampa Bay.
But I saw within the last week, I think that game was on Thursday, wasn't it?
Game. It was the Bucs Bears.
Yeah. So I saw like on social media and stuff that he forgot like what down it was or something like that. I saw that he was getting a lot of flack from the internet and stuff like that. So, and I didn't watch the game, and I know that you are familiar with Tom Brady, so I was just wondering what you thought of that whole situation.
Well, okay, so that's just a dumb mistake on Brady. Like, you can't defend that. Like, I'm just like, that's dumb. That was stupid of you. Why would you do that? But this is something that I don't think, like, this is look just observing Tom Brady and the Buccaneers as a team. Everybody was like, oh, Tampa Bay is going to have all these weapons. One thing that New England provided Tom Brady that people aren't going to give as much, like, thought of, just the casual fan, is how clean, quote-unquote, they kept Tom Brady and how little he got sacked in comparison to the pressure he's, like, he got sacked on Thursday night. Khalil Mack sacked him 3 times alone. Just Khalil Mack did.
Oh, wow.
And so, like, and I'm going to look and see, like, if the rest of the Buccaneers had any sacks. I mean, the Bears had any sacks. But, like, he's not able to sit in that clean pocket like he was most of the time. So, it was, they ended up allowing 3 sacks. So, it was just those 3 sacks. But, like, a 3-sack game did not happen very often in New England. Mm. And so, that's something that, like, that needs to be taken into consideration. Not for this thing. Brady messed up. I don't think Brady's hit the same cliff that I think Drew Brees has hit. But I think that Brady is starting to finally show that, like, yeah, this is a 42-year-old dude.
Yeah.
Life happens. Like, and this is not in a slight or a disrespect or a salty Patriots fan because he left. Like, I hope Tom Brady does well. I think I might have said this on the podcast before. If not, I've told Logan this before. In a perfect world for me, both the Patriots and the Buccaneers, because of Tom Brady, do good enough, like, do well enough that people cannot hate on both sides. They're like, oh, Tom Brady's not exclusively a one-system quarterback, and oh, the Patriots, Bill Belichick is a good head coach and doesn't have to have Tom Brady to be good enough. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And obviously, there's always going to be the comparison, who helped the other more, things like that. But as of right now, the Patriots have looked fine. They lost to a really good Kansas City team, and they looked well while doing it without their starting quarterback. Granted, they got Cam Newton, who's also a very, very able quarterback, very good quarterback. But, and the Buccaneers are sitting at 3-2, and New England didn't get to play their game this week because of the whole COVID thing. But, like, both these teams, I think, are proving that, like, Brady would have been maybe not as good, but good somewhere else, and the Patriots would have been good, but not as good without Brady. So it's like a mutual beneficial, and I hope the casual fan can figure this out and understand that, like, and it's hard, it's like, oh, a Patriots fan's just hyping up the Patriots. I really think I'd have this opinion with anything else, because I have the same opinion with LeBron. Like, I don't think he's better than Jordan yet, and we'll talk about all this a lot later, I think, but, like, he's, you admire the greatness. He is great. Appreciate the greatness while the greatness is happening, and I wish more people would do that with Tom Brady and the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
That yeah. used to be one sentence, but now there's a comma and, which is really sad.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they were together still.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, that was a good breakdown then of Tom Brady. I agree with you for the most part. You know, I don't have very hot takes with football, obviously, just because don't watch it enough, but Jacob is definitely flipping me to turn me into a football guy. You've done more than anyone else has, let's just say that, because I've noticed, actually, like, the past couple weeks, like, watching football like on Sundays at my parents' house with my brothers, usually I'm, like, kind of just zoning out and not paying attention. Or, like, really comprehending the things they're talking about, because I don't pay attention to it at all. But lately, the past couple weeks, I've noticed that I actually know a lot of the things about the games that they don't. Like, I was the only one who knew who the Giants quarterback was this week. I knew, you know, it was Daniel Jones, and they asked me, like, oh, where'd he go to college? And I was like, Duke. So I know stuff now.
Baby steps. Knowing the starting quarterback for a kind of prestigious team is a start, you know? Yeah,
yep.
The Giants are bad, but they're one of those franchises that, like, they'll still be recognizable type of thing, like, no matter how bad they are. I don't know why. I think it's because they play the Cowboys so often, but the Giants will, no matter how bad they are, will always be somewhat, like, not recognizable, just there'll be a brand. Maybe it is recognizable. Anyway, but though that's good.
Yeah.
Baby steps. We're working on him.
Mm-hmm. I like Daniel Jones's nickname too, Danny Dimes.
Danny Dimes.
I like that one. But yeah, if you guys have listened to the last episode, episode one of this glorious series that we've started, you would have heard Jacob's thoughts on Bill O'Brien, the Houston, formerly the Houston GM and head coach. And I just saw that another pretty garbage team in the NFL right now, the Atlanta Falcons, just fired their head coach in Dan Quinn. I do believe he was the head coach, right? He wasn't the GM.
Yeah, he was.
He was just the head coach.
The GM got fired as well, but Thomas Dimitroff was the GM.
Oh, okay.
But they both got fired.
Yeah. But anyways, so Jacob had some very strong opinions with Bill O'Brien, so I was just wondering if you did have any opinions when it comes to Dan Quinn.
I do have strong opinions about Dan Quinn. I thought, like, after the Super Bowl meltdown in 51, when they lost, like, they got up 28-3 and then lost to New England in OT, I thought that, like, he should be like, oh, man, okay, next year. But then the next year, the Falcons were terrible. Not in, like, they just didn't show up. They weren't the same. They made the playoffs, but then lost to the Eagles. And then after, I guess they did make it to the NFC Championship that year. But, like, after that, they just haven't been the same team. And, like, I'm getting some major, like, there's so many things about the Falcons I have a problem with. I thought Dan Quinn should have been fired after the 2018 season.
Hmm.
Because I just didn't think that he showed enough that he was worth being a head coach. I think he should have been fired and then sent to a team that had no promise. Like, he should have been put in the Jets job or a job like that where, like, just you get to be a head coach but not somewhere where you're wasting a generational talent in Julio Jones.
Yeah.
This makes me so mad. I will never forget the Detroit Lions for what they did to Calvin Johnson. Granted, they didn't make him sign the contract. I get that. But they destroyed a man's love for football and wasted a generational talent. And if the Atlanta Falcons don't trade Julio Jones, they will be on the same list as Joe Crowley and the Detroit Lions in the corner of shame.
Are we just going to keep adding to this?
The corner of shame. I'll make a graphic, and we'll literally just, like, flash it on the screen for those of those who are watching on YouTube. If you are watching on YouTube and you don't see the little button that says subscribe, if it says just subscribe and it's red, click on it. It's a magic trick. It'll turn gray, I think, and say subscribed.
Yeah.
Please subscribe, like, comment. We usually do this at the end of the episode, but we didn't forget this time.
Yep.
Because I was thinking about it. So like, comment, subscribe. Actually, please comment. That'd be really cool. We're also on Spotify, if that's easier for you to listen there. But anyway, to the corner of shame.
Yep.
But I really would like to have, Dan Quinn, I don't think gets a job as a head coach again. I think he's a really good defensive coordinator, so I wouldn't be surprised if a team picks him up for that sometime next year. But, like, he's just not a head coach.
Mm.
I just don't think he's a head coach.
Yeah.
Which is weird because, like, the offense is what kind of didn't carry them to that Super Bowl. Like, that defense was bad. And, like, the Super Bowl season, and even after that, their defense just was like, oh, you can't sleep on the Falcons' defense. But, like, they still gave up a lot of points. Like, this is Wikipedia because I just Googled it because I was having – we had to cut out a segment where I was absolutely being a potato. I was just stuttering over the same words, which is normal, but it was worse than normal. But it's like the Falcons defense gave up 204 points, which was 27th in the league. And this is a defensive-minded guy. Before Dan Quinn was the coach of the Falcons, he was the defensive coordinator for the Legion of Boom in Seattle with, like, Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, and Brandon Browner. Mm. Like, he was the defensive coordinator for that secondary and that defense for Seattle. And then he becomes head coach, and the defense is meh. Just meh. So I just think that Dan Quinn doesn't deserve to have a job. I have a genuine distaste for Bill O'Brien, and I probably will for the rest of my life. But I don't think that Dan Quinn. I'm not surprised or upset that he got fired, and I don't know if he'll get another chance.
Yeah, makes sense. makes sense. So while you're talking about that, him possibly spoiling another generational talent like we were seeing with, or we did see with Calvin Johnson, and also what I've heard said about Bill O'Brien with Deshaun Watson. And I've, you know, being on Instagram and stuff, I see a lot of those Deshaun Watson, like, wishing he still had DeAndre Hopkins memes. So I was thinking, while you were talking about that, would it be possible if some GM somewhere, probably either in Atlanta or Houston, was able to pair up Deshaun Watson and Julio Jones?
Honestly, no, I don't think that'll happen, but I'd like to see that happen.
Mm.
Like, I would really like that.
You like, don't think pieces would work for a trade or anything like that?
I'd have to look into it more. But, yeah. Like...
both those guys are probably as close to untouchable as it as they
well,
can
no,
get.
Well, no, I think it'd be Watson that would have to move, and I don't think... unless a team... I really don't know. I don't think that would ever happen. Okay, I'm trying to think... because the Falcons' season's not done, but it's 0-5. So I'm like, okay, trying to think. I really don't think that would ever happen.
Yeah, fair enough. I was just thinking about it, but
I'd have to think about it deeper, and I could do this later, but I really don't have faith in, like, yeah, no, not at all. I don't think that could happen in any way, shape, or form.
Fair enough, fair enough. So, yeah, moving on to talk about Kansas City, which was, I think last episode we were talking about how you were talking about how they were could be capable of going 16-0, and so there they 4-1 now. Yeah, because it's week 5, so they lost pretty handedly. I thought I saw to Las Vegas.
You can't see my face, but I am smiling.
Oh yeah, because so, you're rooting against the Chiefs.
I am. I didn't want them to. I knew that they had a talent, but I'm glad they didn't. I'm smiling. So I am currently attending school, and so Zoom University, we're in 2020. My background was I Googled Raiders Chiefs. Like, if you're at your computer, right, Logan?
Yep, I am.
So Google this.
All
right. You see what pops up right away, how it's this white box with, like, it says Kansas City Chiefs versus Las Vegas Raiders. Just the first thing that pops up when you Google it.
Mm-hmm.
I screenshotted just that, and then that was my Zoom background. For today during class. I was giddy as can be. And then Travis Kelce going, oh, I need to do more, even though he led the team in receiving. I respect that to a certain level, but there's also a certain point where I'm like, what?
What?
Yeah. Anyway, I'm just, I don't know. I think I like the Chiefs, like, not as like a team, but like I think they're good, like best team in the NFL. But like, it was nice to see him lose. Josh Jacobs is a guy. I'm a big fan of Josh Jacobs, though, like, actually. Like, I don't know him as a person, so, like, if he does something messed up, I don't want this to come back to bite me in the butt. I'm not saying that he will, but, like, he seems like the type of dude that just, like, when they did Hard Knocks with Lost, like, with the Raiders, he didn't want to be in it. He just wasn't in it because he wanted to focus on football. I'm like, that's the type of dude? The second he said that, if I'm John Gruden and Mike Mayock for the Raiders in Vegas, I just would be giggling to myself. You just found an absolute unit of a player that wants to be about the football, and that's just something that you love to see. You just love to see it.
Mm. So I guess what happened to them in the game that Las Vegas was able to, I guess in your opinion, what did they do to kind of...
Josh Jacobs. The Chiefs' defense is their weakness. That's without a doubt... their weakness.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that's it. That's their weakness. And so having a running back like Josh Jacobs that had a really good game, like looking at the box score for Josh Jacobs, Josh Jacobs is Alabama, not Alabama. Yeah, Alabama. Yes, Alabama. Went to Alabama. A rookie last year, like I said, didn't want to be on the on Hard Knocks. Okay, so he rushed the ball 23 times, so he's a workhorse. So on those 23 rushes, he only had 77 yards, whatever, 3.5 yards. That's not great. Two touchdowns. He had two receptions for 8 yards. He just did everything. I'm going to hype up Josh Jacobs for forever. 77 yards and 2 touchdowns isn't great with 3.35 yards a carry. But, like, when you're your team's biggest threat and you still get your numbers, oh, yeah. Josh Jacobs all day. Mm. Big fan of Josh Jacobs.
Yeah. So, and then with Carolina, I know that we talked about in week one, I think it was week one, right? McCaffrey went down.
Week two.
Yeah. So, but he's not out for the entire season, is he?
Nope. He is a, I don't know how many weeks he has left. I feel like it was like a 6 or 7 week injury.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess from the outside looking in, I always thought that it was like Carolina wasn't a very good team, but he's like the best running back in the league. And so that's why they were okay. But it seems like, I mean, I at least it seems like they've got a couple wins, haven't they, since he's gone down?
They are currently, oh, I got to think. They won this week. So I think they're 2-2, I think.
Hmm. I heard some people talking about like kind of like Ewing theory type stuff of like, you know, where a team loses their best player and they actually get better instead of worse.
Oh, that's not going to happen with them.
You don't think so?
No, not even close. That happened when the Panthers lost Cam Newton, and then they realized this gem they had that was Christian McCaffrey.
Mm.
But I don't think lightning strikes twice there. They definitely get better when McCaffrey comes back. Mm. I don't know how much better, because they did get a lot of production out of Davis, the backup running back for the Panthers. But I don't think that they get worse when McCaffrey's out. Better when McCaffrey's out, excuse me. Mm. I think they definitely get worse. So yeah, like, cause they're like, I don't think I get what you're saying, but I don't think that one. I think it happened last year, but I don't think it happens again.
Yeah.
With them not having McCaffrey.
Fair enough. So how good do you think Carolina is then without McCaffrey?
Without McCaffrey?
Yeah.
Okay, so like, they're sitting at 2-2. Did they not play a week, or am I just out of control?
Week
5 now, right?
Yeah. This is week 5. So they might have had a bye, I guess.
Already? Maybe. Okay. I'm looking at their schedule now. So week 13 was week 1. Oh, they're not. So they lost to the Raiders, the Bucks, beat the Panther. Okay, so they've won the last 3. They started 0-2 and they've won the last 3.
Oh, wow.
So they're 3-2.
So they lost the 2 that they had McCaffrey and they won 3.
Okay, if you're so going to think that that's...
Well, that's probably why I've heard that stuff. That's probably where that comes from. That makes more sense now. But
my thing is, they played a Raiders team, which is super underrated.
Mm-hmm.
They played a Buccaneers team, which is just good. I think the Buccaneers are a good team. They beat the Chargers. The Cardinals, when Kyler Murray played like trash. And then the Falcons, who are booty.
Yeah.
Absolute booty.
Makes sense, so, then, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so like next week they've got the Bears. I think they could beat the Bears because I think the Bears are the worst team that only has one loss.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was going to say, you think they're the worst team?
No. They're the worst one loss team. They were the worst undefeated team going into week 4, then they lost to the Colts. I think the Bears could end up 7-9. Like they'll just them being bad will catch up to them.
Mm.
That's terrible to say it like that. But, like, they barely beat the Lions. They barely beat the Giants. And then barely beat the Falcons. And they're going to have all these Bears fans going, well, we came back from deficits so we could keep... Stop. Stop. You beat the Buccaneers because Tom Brady played bad and had terrible clock management. And you have a great pass rush. Fun fact, you go back in history, do you know how to beat Tom Brady? Do you want to know a little secret?
What?
Have a competent offense that doesn't turn the ball over, which the Bears barely do, and have a good pass rush.
Mm.
Rewind time, February 2nd, 2007, or 8, Super Bowl 42. Eli Manning, a competent quarterback, leads the Giants offense, which is average, pretty good, but average. They got a good running back in Brandon Jacobs, Amari Toomer, and Ooh, I'm going to forget his name. I feel terrible. Actually, it's David Tyree. Okay, now I have bad memories. I'm going to cry. Anyway, and the pass rush is what beat him. We're getting way off topic. Back to the Panthers. Because somehow I got down to Super Bowl 42. I think the Panthers can beat the Bears. I think they can beat the Rams. I think they can beat the Saints if the Saints play like they are right now, which is they're losing to the Chargers currently behind the arm of Justin Herbert, which I've hyped up constantly since he started playing. Playing like an absolute man, and Drew Brees is washed when he doesn't have a big boy like Michael Thomas who's not playing tonight because he got in a fight with a teammate. Yeah, so he's not playing tonight. But I think that the Drew Brees is similar space to Tom Brady, where like if they don't have a very good situation around them, they will struggle. But I'm not saying that they are not great. There's just a point where you can't do stuff anymore. Like your body just says like, nah, fam. But yeah, I think the Panthers, if like McCaffrey never comes back, I think that they could lose to the Bears, beat the Saints, or lose to the Saints, beat the Falcons, lose to the Chiefs, probably lose to the Bucks the second time, beat the Lions, could beat the Vikings, could beat the Broncos. Honestly, the Panthers could be spooky because they play absolute garbage. How I didn't realize how lucky the Panthers were. Like, oh man, we got to play the Chiefs, but like then you play the Lions and the Vikings as like two of the you get to play the NFC North, which is bad to start with. Then you get to play the Broncos as one of your matchups, and then you get Washington.
So they have a pretty easy schedule without when McCaffrey's out and when he comes back.
That's the rest of the season, and when he comes back. I don't know when that is exactly. I think the Panthers are just a good team. I think that they're a team that struggled early, but I think that they could be good-ish. I'm going to say this, and then they're literally not going to win another game. The Bears will like finally show up and figure out their offense and roll them, but no. I don't know. I think they're better with McCaffrey on the field because of what he can do. I think that they just learned that they have a pretty good backup running back, too. That's what they've learned from this experience.
Fair enough. Yeah.
So I know that like they added a seed, didn't they, in the
playoffs.
So how many teams make it now?
It was six, now it's seven.
Per
side
conference. Yeah. So seven. So that's 14 teams. So
let me make sure I'm positive. It's 14. Okay.
Yeah.
I was like 99% positive, but I wanted to be that 100%.
Yeah. Did Carolina make the playoffs last year?
They did not.
They didn't. Do you think
last year's the Saints were the representative for the NFC South last year, and the NFC wild card games the wild card teams last year would have been Vikings were one of them because they beat New Orleans again, and then the other one would have been Seattle. So who won the NFC?
Seattle was in the playoffs. I'm pretty sure.
It was Seattle and Minnesota because the 49ers were the one seed last year.
I think Seattle lost to the Packers. Pretty sure.
And then they lost to the Packers in the next week in the divisional round. But this, because they beat Philly, because Philly was a team that looked like they didn't want to win the division, and they still did.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Makes sense. But, yeah, Carolina probably isn't up to that echelon of team, I'm guessing.
No,
to make the
I think they could, because like, and this is obviously early, and with this whole COVID thing, who knows what anything's gonna look like. But like, honestly, with how things are looking now, I've always been a proponent that I think that the division champ should get a playoff spot. But the NFC East is trying to change me, because the Eagles are currently in the lead of the NFC. No, they're not. The Cowboys are. Did the Eagles win last week? My whole life is flipped around. No, they got destroyed. They got destroyed by Pittsburgh. So the Cowboys at 2-3 lead the NFC East.
Oh,
and it's
wow.
Like a sad 2-3.
Yeah.
Like it's not even, but like Seahawks. Playoffs are gonna be really exciting, I think, this year. Because I feel like this seventh thing is gonna open up so much, and the race for the one seed is gonna mean so much more now.
Yeah.
So that's really fun. Yeah, so I don't know. I think that there's a lot of things to be excited for this year.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So I only have one more NFL question.
Okay.
And that is, should I have started Kyler Murray over Josh Allen this week in fantasy?
Okay. Well, Josh Allen, I think, is playing kind of like okay, so I'm trying to think of a good example of this. Actually, I have one. So, the Heat, Miami Heat, just recently played in a final series against the Lakers. Mm-hmm. Do you think that they are a better team talent-wise than Milwaukee?
No.
But they were hot, correct?
Yeah. And I think their system is... They beat it with, like, a coaching system. Okay. Yeah, too.
Okay. We're going to ignore the coaching system and focus on the fact that they were hot.
Okay.
This is a lot more prevalent concept in baseball, where, like, you cannot be the better team, but if you're hot, you're hot, and it'll happen. I think that the Bills are a hot team right now. I think they're playing at the peak of their ability.
Mm.
And that's about it. So
how's it doing tonight? Aren't they playing tonight?
I don't even know, with everything getting moved around.
I haven't looked at it, but I'm kind of relying on him to get me a win this week because I didn't start Kyler Murray.
We're going to play tonight, or no, the Patriots were going to play this like tonight at like 5, but now they're playing. I think we're getting Tuesday night football.
Oh,
I
think
it's tomorrow. It just, everything is so, it's going to be so hard to know exactly, but because they're playing Tennessee, which I think Tennessee beats them bad.
Patriots or Bills?
No, Bills.
Okay. So the Bills are playing tomorrow then, and not today.
Tomorrow at like 6.
Okay.
And I don't know. I think they're it's Tuesday. They're playing tomorrow. I just Googled it. Tomorrow.
Yeah.
At 6 p.m. Central Time.
Hmm. Okay. Well, Kyler Murray, I saw he had a pretty good game. He got me like 26 points, but the only problem is he was on my bench. So, because I've been going by the projections, and it seems like the projections have been like wrong on who I'm supposed to start basically every week with the in terms of quarterbacks.
It's weird because last week Josh Allen played. They haven't played this week, and you started him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It just depends on who they play. That's what I'd focus on more. It's kind of a toss up. They're both to me similar in like what they could do. But Josh Allen getting Stephon Diggs has done a lot for him.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So I guess, are there any other Week 5 thoughts that you have?
That's about it for Week 5 for me. One thing, big fan of Justin Herbert. Russell Wilson wasn't as crazy as he has been previously. Like, at one point he was on pace for, like, 75 touchdowns this season.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'm pretty sure he slowed down this week. Only had like 2 touchdowns, I think. That was against the Dolphins. He had 2 touchdowns. My weeks are all blending together. They played Atlanta and he had 4 touchdowns again. So.
Mm.
No, they played Minnesota. They started Atlanta. They played Minnesota. And they won and he had 3 touchdowns. Dak Prescott, I think. Not Dak Prescott. Wow. Wow. We need to move to a different sport because my brain's exploding. Russell Wilson is my, like, hot takes with Jacob. Fancy intro. This isn't really a hot take. Russell Wilson breaks his single-season touchdown record. Actually, that is a hot take.
It is? Is he on track to?
I don't know. I think he does it. Single season. It's Mahomes has it right now.
You say touchdown or yards?
A touchdown record.
Okay.
Single-season touchdown record. Peyton Manning still has it? I thought Mahomes beat it. No, Mahomes only got to 50. Manning had that one year that had 55. Yeah, Wilson shatters it. Wilson's going to have 57 passing touchdowns this year.
So he's definitely on track for it, right? If you're making that kind of a... Like, he has to be...
Well, right now he's at what? 19 through 5 weeks.
Yeah, so easily. Yeah, if he keeps that average per week.
Well, because at right. 5 weeks, so yeah, 19
that it's almost times 4. That's almost 4 per 50. Week.
Yeah, no, he got this. He's got it. I have faith.
Mm.
Easy.
Yeah.
There's hot take.
Hot takes with Jacob.
That'll be a thing that you guys get to have every single week.
Yeah, we need to get a sponsor for that.
Hot Takes with Jacob, featuring your product sponsor. This could be where we advertise your product and how it's superior in every way. Today's sponsor is going to be the will of the state of Nebraska and the want to play football, because it's not this weekend, but next weekend we get football.
Yep.
Hot Takes with Jacob, sponsored by the will of the state of Nebraska.
That was great. That was great.
Okay.
We'll have to do a different one every time.
That'll be funny. Okay, yeah. I'm ready.
Okay, and then, so I guess if that's it for NFL and your mind is all nice and marinated from sticking with football for so long, we can switch it over to the NBA now, which is something that I would really like to talk about.
So I have some questions for you, Logan.
Yeah, go for it.
I didn't, like, you sent me a text with him, which was a lot more courteous than, so I was able to, like, kind of look at what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So with the NBA, it just wrapped up.
Mm-hmm.
At what point did you figure out the Lakers had won the game? Like, when did you, like, just...
I was sure that they...
Yeah. But besides just saying the very end of the game.
Yeah. Well, okay, I'm not going to say this is the first time, but I was for sure, like, at halftime. I think there was very little hope in me left. Because they were down by 28.
I had genuinely thought that, like, because when they sent out their notifications, like, sometimes there's mistakes on who scored the touchdown or what the score is or how much time was on the clock. Like, life happens. Mm-hmm. I thought that they, because I wasn't able to be watching it live, I thought that they accidentally forgot to replace the Heat score from the first quarter.
Really?
Yeah. I thought the Heat just had a crazy first quarter.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, man, 36 and a quarter.
Yeah, pretty
nice.
Good. Yeah.
And I thought that they just accidentally was like, oh, yeah, the Lakers. Because the Lakers had 36 in the second quarter. I thought they just did their, like, math wrong.
Oh.
And they forgot to, like, update the Heat score, but updated the Lakers.
Yeah.
Then I went and looked. Not the case.
Nope. Yeah. Heat scored 36 points and a half. Yeah. And I don't even think it was really the Heat's fault. Like, the Lakers were just that good on defense this game. Like I mean, I think the Heat, Jimmy Butler wasn't crazy aggressive. He only took 10 shots the whole game. Bam Adebayo, his numbers looked really good, but watching him, he just kind of, I don't know, he let a lot of balls go. He just kind of looked like a bit of butterfingers throughout the game. But so all those plays were really frustrating. Also, calls early on were pretty, I thought they favored the Lakers quite a bit. Like, I was pretty angry watching the game just because I was cheering for the Heat. But I settled down after it was completed and everything like that. I've come to terms with it, which I'll talk about later on. But just because we haven't talked about game 4 or game 5 on this podcast yet. So I kind of wanted to, touch on them a bit just because the series was so good and deserved a way better ending than the ending it got.
Yeah.
I
agree.
Yeah. It's just in terms of, like, they, you know, the Heat were underdogs already to begin with. And then coming into it, losing their leading scorer through the playoffs in Dragic, and really their defensive engine, and who, honestly, some people were arguing before this series started, who was their best player in Bam. I wasn't really giving into those arguments, but he was a very good player. Anyways, them losing both of those guys and then still putting up the incredible game 3 and 5 that they did. Jimmy Butler was just, honestly, I know people say this a lot. Like, this is Mark Jackson's, like, go-to line of, like, you know, this person deserves more credit for this or something. But I think that Jimmy Butler genuinely has not been given enough credit, like, in this series. Even though he's been given a lot, he just had, honestly, one of the greatest finals, like, two games of any player ever. Like, and it was just so crazy because he affects the game in a way where he's scoring better than anyone on the floor. On his team, obviously, LeBron was matching him in game five.
Yeah.
But if you talk about Jimmy Butler and the list of things that he's good at, scoring is like fourth. Like,
no, for sure.
It's like
100%.
He's a really good player, just all around player. You keep going.
Yeah. So like, with that whole scoring thing and Jimmy Butler, this is something that I want to quick touch on. Me and Logan showed me this YouTube show, and I can't remember. Do you know
Thinking what, Basketball?
Thinking Basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy today, as of the 12th, released his top 10 players of the year. Mm-hmm. And if you want me and Logan to like react to that video, drop a like, and if we get to like 10 likes, we'll do like an extra bonus episode of us reacting to that video.
Yeah.
Because I guess I spoiled it. Jimmy Butler's on there somewhere. I would have liked him at a different place, but that's something that we can talk about when we react to it, when you awesome people get us to 10 likes. So, yeah, that's all I wanted to throw in there. And also, I'm totally with you. Jimmy Butler played out of it. Like, he was on a different level. But the thing is, he didn't do it every game.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to say that, like, oh, you need to do that every game, but, like, I didn't feel like he didn't do anything in game four. Games one and two is where I was more disappointed in Butler.
Mm. Yeah.
Than game four.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, but scoring-wise, yeah, he was definitely more passive. I think every single game that he had either a triple-double or a near triple-double. But yeah, I see what you're saying. Game one and two, yeah, he wasn't really taking the offensive load that he would eventually take in games three through five.
Oh, you though. I kind of cut you.
Yeah, so like, with that though, game four, you know, his numbers weren't as magnificent as they were in games three and five, but I still think he had a pretty good, like a really good game. I think the biggest thing that changed was Bam came back for game four, and there was just a huge difference in when Bam was on the floor in this series for Jimmy Butler's production versus when he was off of it. And that's not because of anything that Bam's doing wrong. It's really just because of who would be in there instead. And that man is usually Kelly Olynyk. Kelly Olynyk, and like when they just don't have Bam on the floor and they are running Olynyk at center or even Myers Leonard or maybe even Iggy sometimes, that just provides so much more spacing. And Jimmy Butler was just thriving in this series, especially in game three, and just having a clear lane to drive just about every single play. And down the stretch especially, that's what he was doing. Like literally every play he was taking it to the cup and either getting an assist or getting to the line, really. But that was a big difference. And I thought that in game six, in game fives, in five and six, they didn't play Olynyk at all. He was a DNP. And I thought that was a big mistake. I thought that the floor stretching that he provides like just unlocks a whole new piece of Butler's game. He was able to conjure a lot of that up in game five and have the magnificent game that he had even without that spacing. But I think it does do a whole world of difference for Butler on the floor when he has that shooting around him. I don't think it's like a Butler. I mean, I don't think it's like a Simmons and Bede thing where they can't work well together. I think they do have parts of their games that complement each other very well. But when you're wanting Butler to be your primary scorer and get a 40 piece, like usually the floor stretching big is the one you want to go with over the guy that really people can sag off of pretty easily and is more of the distributor.
For sure.
But yeah. I guess what I'm saying is Jimmy Butler he had a magnificent game just because, you know, not only because of scoring, he had high rebound and assist numbers every game. He had I think he averaged like four steals a game. He had some blocks, some big ones too, and very, very, very efficient. Pretty ridiculous. And then all of that on top of him guarding the best player, one of the best players of all time on the other side of the court every single play and bringing the ball up the court and being the primary ball handler in offense and being the facilitator and just basically filling every single role for the entire game. And that was just pretty ridiculous, honestly. And he played any all he did all that stuff in like 45, I think, is what he averaged minutes per game this series, excluding game six. But yeah, he averaged like 45 minutes per game. And that all of that is just, man, you just kind of gotta give the man his credit for
no,
all that.
No, for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's really what my main takeaway, I guess, for the Heat side of it was, just a legendary Butler series that will probably not, you know, live on in history as because much as you would like it to.
No, because, and we've talked about this, how if it doesn't, like, if this would have went game seven, and it would have been a good game seven, even if the Lakers would have won, people would have been like, man, that was a crazy performance by Jimmy Butler.
Yeah. But,
and then, like, we talked about how some games will just fade away into obscurity because of the outcome. And I think game three for Jimmy Butler, that'll happen. It just, it'll be brought up next year, but not the year after that. Like, it won't be a thing that happens all the time.
Yeah.
It won't be brought up ever. Unless somebody replicates it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, in the future, it was like, oh, the last time this happened was when Jimmy Butler did it in the bubble type of thing, but...
Yeah, for sure. Also, I thought that Game 5 was... me and Jacob have talked about on this podcast before how we talked about how Game 6 of Raptors-Celtics was one of the best playoff games we've seen in, like, all, like maybe our entire lives. But
yeah,
it's definitely up there. It was a really good game. I thought this game would definitely come in second this year for the best, yes, the best playoff games. And you know, that's one thing that I was actually talking to Jacob before this podcast, before we started recording, was, you know, I'm thinking of maybe possibly doing like breaking down the top 10 best games from this postseason, during this off season, now that we're without basketball for a while and probably a long while, because they don't know exactly when the next season's going to happen. But if you guys like that idea, and if you want to see that happen, definitely give us your feedback on that. Make a push for it, and you will definitely see that happen, just because that's something that I would love to do, and Jacob as well. So,
yeah, no, for sure. It'll be a lot of fun, and Logan, the basketball guy, as well as we're trying to convert him to the football side, that'll be a really good way to keep the, like, give him, or just give basketball something to talk about, give a basketball side. And we'll just kind of keep basketball as a part of it, because there is news all year round, but we won't be able to react to games and stuff like that. So, yeah, we'll for sure do that top 10 thing. How it'll work, we're not really sure yet, but I think that'll be something that,
yeah,
that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But yeah, game five, though, I guess just talking about it a little bit with Duncan Robinson, he had like, I was really waiting for him to have a game like that in these finals. He really didn't have a game like that in the Western Conference, in the Eastern Conference Finals this year either. But against Milwaukee, he had a few games in a row where he had, like, you know, 6, 7, 8 three-pointers. And against the Celtics, they really keyed in on him, guarded him like, you know, he was like the best player on their team. Was not letting him get any shots off, really. And so, you know, Celtics series didn't go super well for him. But, and then in this series, you know, at the beginning of it, he was also kind of paid attention to the same way. And then in game five, even with all of like the attention they were showing him, he had like zero open looks. I think he may have had one. There was one three that he took that was in like transition and nobody was really around him. But every other one was like borderline could have been called a foul. Like, that's how close the defense was to him. And he ended up making 7 for 13 from three, and scored 26 points. And that was a huge part of them getting the lead. And also, there was a huge play in like the third quarter, I think it was, that got me off my seat, which was when Duncan Robinson took a shot from the corner for three, and Anthony Davis basically just flattened him out of bounds, like fell on top of him. And there was no call. And the ball, you know, went down to the other side of the court in transition, and Caruso hit a three. So, in my mind, that should be three free throws for the Heat, and that three from Caruso shouldn't exist. So, that's like a 6-point swing, essentially.
Yeah.
And, you know, even in the moment, just how the broadcasters and everybody reacted, I'm pretty sure, like, Jeff Van Gundy said, he was like, that's pathetic. Like, that's pathetic that that's not called. And I felt the same way.
And this is something, Van Gundy, 9 times out of 10, will defend the defender and be like, mm-hmm. come on, that's soft. Like,
yeah.
Not, I don't want to say that, because all the time, he's usually about, like, what the rules would say, but, like, he doesn't give the offense the benefit of the doubt very often. So for something mm-hmm. like that, for him to go, that's pathetic, it's that pathetic type of thing.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So that was, yeah, that was a big moment that, you know, down the stretch when I was like, if the Lakers win this game, I'm going to be so mad, like, just because of that. But, yeah, it's luckily the Heat were able to extend the series to 6, which was, that was just, I was really happy when that happened. Obviously, my joy completely sank after, like, the first really 8 minutes of game 6. Could tell kind of the way it was going to turn out. But yeah, so that was disappointing. But yeah, I guess that's really it from the finals, unless you had any thoughts about, I guess, the series as a whole.
My thing, I think, is that I am just sad. Like, this series, like you said it, like you summed up a lot of the things that I was feeling. And I think the biggest thing for me is it just, I wanted it to be better. Like, it was a really good, like, if it was a book, it was like, okay, it starts off a little slow. And then it was like, man, that's wild. What a crazy twist. And then you're like, oh, this is a really good, oh, yeah. Wow. And then the end, you're just like, really? That felt rushed. Like, yeah. That's how I would describe this series if it was a book. Mm. So.
Makes sense.
That was really weird.
No, yeah.
Just kind of bummed. Like, not like apparently like, oh, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. I was just kind of bummed. Like, I was obviously, like, and this is a thing. Like, I'm not on the whole, this one doesn't count for LeBron. Like, no, get out of here. Stop. LeBron did his part.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what's the finals MVP going to look like? LeBron proved it's me, child.
Yeah.
Undisputed, it should have been LeBron. Like, they made the right call. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go too deep into this because this could be a whole episode by itself. But for me, the biggest thing is, like, I don't think everybody's saying, oh, does this make James surpass Jordan as the greatest of all time? And I'm not ready to commit to that. I think it makes the conversation more compelling, but I don't think that it has, like, and I've talked about it a little bit when I was talking about New England and Tom Brady. I'm just enjoying the greatness that is LeBron James while I still get to enjoy it for the next 2 or 3 years. You know what I mean? Because, like, he is getting older, and the way he plays basketball, who knows how long he's going to be able to play. Hopefully it's healthily for however long he wants to. But, like, there's a point where it just doesn't necessarily happen like it used to anymore. So, I don't know. I think it was like, in terms of the series, how the whole thing started, it was just a disappointing end. Good series, disappointing end. And then with the whole what it does for LeBron, I think it just shows that LeBron, like, I'm not a LeBron stan. Like, I'm not at all, or, like, love LeBron. I'm not going to hate LeBron just to hate him. I try to stay in the middle as just a guy that, like, appreciates his greatness but doesn't, like, anything he does is right. Like, I don't like how he complains.
True.
Which there is a lot of. And if LeBron does anything, he rubs off on his teammates. And, oh, boy. Do they all know how to complain? Anyway, congratulations to Lakers and Lakers fans. My brother-in-law is a big, big Lakers fan. So I sent him a picture, and it was like, congratulations to you Lakers fans, but especially to those who remember these OGs. And I'm going to pull it up really quick because it was funny. The starting lineup, and it hurt to see, of this, like, old Lakers team. And he's like, yeah, those were really, really, really dark days. Hold on. Here it is. It's the starting lineup was Kendall Marshall, Jody Meeks, Kent Bazemore, Ryan Kelly, and Jordan Hill. So it said, congrats to all you Lakers fans, but especially the Lakers fans. I have no clue. But, like, that was an era of Lakers basketball. It was probably when Kobe was hurt one of those years. But, like,
oh, yeah.
That's so bad. That would hurt to watch. Mm-hmm. So congrats to guys that stuck through all that. it just, yeah, congrats are in order for a team that won a championship because it was a legit championship. Mm-hmm. I was skeptical at first when they were talking about all these weird rules they might implement, but I think that the Lakers earned it, and congrats to them.
Yeah. No, yeah, for sure. You described that perfectly, even though I couldn't hear most of it, which, you know, well, for those of you listening, me and Jacob's connection has been really bad the past, I don't know, 20 minutes, but I think I got the gist of it. You know, you guys will hear us perfectly, but we don't really know what each other's saying. But yeah, from what I heard, it was, yeah, I agree with that a lot, that, like, you know, throughout this playoff run, I have been kind of like angry a lot watching LeBron and the Lakers advance, and me just kind of getting mad at a lot of the calls, and him complaining about every call, and that, just that type of stuff. But really, in the hours after they won the championship last night, I kind of came to terms with, like, you know, I've never considered myself a LeBron hater. I've never considered myself like a LeBron fan or stan or anything. Like, I've always just been kind of in between. But yeah, and we will talk about this, I think, next episode, where we will do a whole thing on LeBron's legacy, since, like you said, we are getting kind of long here, and also maybe hopefully our connection will be better next episode. But yeah, I think that, like you said, I'm just going to try to enjoy the greatness of LeBron for these last years that it's going to be available to us for viewing. and I really have kind of taken a little bit of a different view on the GOAT debate after he did what he did last night. Like, I my mind isn't changed. I'm not going to say that. But I do think that it's, you know, less of like a objective question that you can really answer definitively. And yeah, so I guess, and also just like AD being the perfect complementary piece to LeBron, and them being one of the, you know, perfect pairing of duo the league has ever seen, one of them. And I'm just really excited, yeah, to see what they can do in the seasons to come. Assuming AD stays, which I'm sure he will. I think it's nothing but a formality at this point that he's going to resign this offseason. But, yeah. And maybe they'll pass your Celtics in all-time rings, which I was also wondering what you thought about that. Do you think they should count it the way that they do now? Because technically the league does say they have 17 rings now, 17 titles, but in Los Angeles they only have 12, because, you know, the first five they won, they were in Minneapolis. And my only beef with them counting those championships is that they don't even have George Mikan's jersey retired in Staples. So, like, how can you claim his titles and you're not gonna hang the man's jersey up?
Yeah.
That's like a big, like, how can you claim those? It's just kind of like, no, that, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm in the same. I don't know. That's a whole, I can't think. I think the franchise is 117. I don't like how the Lakers look at it, but anyway.
Yeah, I think it's just weird for LA fans to claim it as 17, because it's like, do LA fans, I highly doubt there's LA fans really that are out there that claim like the Brooklyn Dodgers World Series titles or that St. Louis Rams Super Bowl. You know?
That, you know? I don't know. I got to think about that. My mind's potato right now. I'm just a jiggly body of just brain mush.
No, yeah. That's fair. But
you know, one thing that I do know, Logan?
What?
Oh, were you going to, did you have a point?
No, I was just going to cap off what I was saying, but you keep going.
Oh, then cap it. Cap it.
Okay. I was just going to say that, like, I guess I don't really know how I feel about it, but because the way that it is now, you know, those titles count no matter where the franchise is, it's as long as it's essentially considered the same franchise. But I think that it is kind of weird that fans kind of count them. So it is kind of like a weird gray area. But, yeah. You take it, Jacob.
Yeah, but I was just going to say, my brain may be mush, but one thing I do remember is that we did not forget to remind you to like, comment, subscribe, and hit the bell. But I think we need to do it again, which I kind of already did by bringing all of them up. But hit the like button, ka-chow, and then subscribe. It's going to be a big red bar.
Yeah.
If you click on it, it turns to dark gray and has a D at the end of the word subscribe, which means you've done it. You've joined one of the greatest communities to ever exist, that being the Next Man Up podcast crew.
Let's get to 20 subscribers.
We're close, aren't we?
Yeah, I think we're at 17.
We go. We got this. 10 likes on this video, and we will do a reaction to Thinking Basketball's video of their top 10 of the season and give our takes on that one, as well as show the support, and we will be reacting to our top 10 basketball things. And there is a couple issues that I've been thinking of that are basketball-related that I could think that could be fun to throw in there that I'm pretty sure me and Logan disagree on. And so if you would like to see me and Logan disagree, drop a like for that. And like we said last week, please leave comments. I like to be talked bad about, and Logan likes to be positively reinforced. So any kind of comment is welcome.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, and that reminds me, I should probably mention this. I don't know if you saw, but there was a comment on our last video. And for, you know, the questions that we asked for.
Yes.
And we had one question from one of our very loyal fans. He asked, I'm going to swing this over to you just because it's more of a question for you than it is me. What are your top 20 reasons for why country music is the best music?
Oh.
And you can do 20. Three. I'll give you three reasons just because 20 is a lot.
Okay, I'll go five. I'll respond to that comment with my 20. Like, I'll give my full 20. but for me, I'll give my top five. So I'll start at five. I think five, a big part of it is just the presence of steel guitars. four, the ability to use the same chord progression, but that's just music in general. So just kidding. I think I like the rasp and, like, twang. I don't want to say twang because that's got a negative connotation. I think that... And I'm not a fan of modern country necessarily. I like some of it, but I think that what some people do with their voices, if you really listen to it in country, is really admirable, I guess. I think I relate to it more, so that's number two. And number one, it just puts me in a better mood than other types of music. Like, I like genuinely notice that when I listen to, like, rock music, like, if I'm lifting or if I'm doing something, it doesn't make me, like, sad or mad. It just, like... But, like, country music, there's songs that'll make me smile because of, like, the nostalgia factor from my childhood. So, to wrap those up quick, five is steel guitar, four is chord progression, three is voice ability, two is, I honestly forgot already.
Sorry.
Because I rattle these off. I'll make a list of 20, and then I will respond to that comment. But, no, for sure the number one is the nostalgia factor for me because it's what I listened to growing up, and it just makes me smile.
Okay. Cool. That was a very, very good response. I honestly wasn't expecting you to get, like, five that quickly.
I love country. I'm a big fan, and I'll never not like it. Anyway.
Yeah. But, yeah, anyways, you guys check out or look forward to next video or podcast, next podcast episode. We will be talking about the GOAT debate. So that will be definitely the clickbait title for everybody to click on.
We'll even type it in all caps.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll try to make it look as clickbaity as possible. But yeah, so guys, look forward to that and just more NFL talk. Hopefully when Jacob's mind isn't as jumbled, get him more focused in and able to, you know, give his takes on football. Even though I thought it went well today, he might not, but I thought it went pretty well. But yeah, as always, like and subscribe, like we've said multiple times now. But, as always, thank you guys for listening, and we will talk to you guys next time.
Adios, amigos.